Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt. And
today we're discussing student loan payment pause, the worst car loans, and avoiding this common HSA blunder.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday Flight episode where we are going to take a look back on the stories that we came across this week, and we're going to talk about how it affects our personal finances. I'm excited to get to the stories you mentioned, plus several others during this episode. But I know first you wanted to share a little bit about how much you love your credit union.
Okay, so I have a love-hate relationship with my credit union right now.
Yes.
We have talked about on the show many times about how much we love credit unions.
We do.
There are a lot of reasons for that. I'm pretty sure we did a whole episode on that, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago.
I think it was called Why We Love Credit Unions.
And you should too.
It was more than a year ago, I think.
Well, I still dig them, but I will say I have a pain point with my current credit union right now, and it is their website is awful. It's trash. And I was trying to transfer money recently from my credit union account to a savings account with another institution. And the way they limit your transfers, it's just painful. It's like $2,000 a day max. But then go back in like a week later and it's like, we still haven't finished the transfer, so you can't transfer anymore. And so I just have
you still want that to happen? Okay, thanks for letting us know.
We'll get on it. I don't know, after we like take a nap or something.
And then we'll send you a fax with the confirmation.
Right. So I just like wanted to put that out there. Love credit unions. There's so many reasons to do business with a credit union. I just wish that my local credit union would get their act together when it comes to a little bit better customer service from, in particular, that website standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the downsides that we presented in that episode.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the few downsides we gave. They don't pay great interest rates if you're a saver, and they also have poor interfaces when it comes to just the online support, the online interface. This is one area that I'm glad to see other kind of medium-sized players step into the mix, right? Because we love credit unions because they offer great competitive rates if you're looking for a loan. But now there are folks like Rocket Mortgage or Better.com, these players that I kind of see as like more middle-of-the-pack kind of lenders. Because before, what I felt like there were a bunch of massive banks.
Yeah, there was this huge
disparity.
The big
guys, and then there were like the credit unions. And because of that, we said, okay, if we got to pick one over the other, let's go with the credit unions.
Right, right.
But now these other companies are stepping into the void, essentially, and they're also offering really great rates. And then oftentimes they're selling those loans to other loan servicers who have great online portals. They make it really easy to actually set up those automatic payments, the ability to transfer money in and out of those accounts very easily. Even just like some basics, like online statements. One of my credit unions, they don't issue you a mortgage statement every single month.
Right.
Seriously, like they choose like 3 random months of the year. But yeah, with you. Like credit unions, but there is definitely some room for improvement.
Yeah, they leave a little to be desired, especially on that technological front. And so I'm just putting this out there to my local credit union. I would love to see you invest some, a little bit of time, a little effort into making that website more user-friendly and even just making a transfer. It shouldn't be as difficult as it was. I love you. I'll stick with you. But I just want you to know that you can improve. You can do better.
But as long as they're still offering those free Atlanta United tickets. Remember that one time we scored those free?
That's right. Instagram challenge or something from our local credit union.
That's right. We won it. That was a lot of fun. All right, man. Let's go ahead and get to our stories from this week. This is that quick sampling that we found interesting. And let's first kick it off with student loans. This is something that's relevant to many How to Money listeners. And this was announced actually last Friday, but it was after our Friday flight was already out.
Yeah, it was like Friday 5 p.m. or something like that.
Yeah, one of those last minute things. And so it turns out that the student loan payment pause will continue. I know, if I had student loans, this would be pretty great news. I'd be pretty pumped right now, but I'm more glad to not have any student loans currently.
Same.
But not having to pay on those loans if you do have them, while also not accruing interest, is going to allow you to prioritize other financial goals for the time being. Maybe that's saving up for that down payment for your new place, investing that money if that's not something you've already done. All that is great for you, right?
Or just building up that emergency fund if you're not where you want to be yet.
Step one.
Yeah,
gear number one, baby. And this is especially great news if you are on the 10-year public service loan forgiveness plan, because that means 23 months where payments weren't required, and all 23 of those months are actually going to count towards your decade-long repayment period. That's incredibly good news for those folks. That's a significant chunk.
That's almost 20% of the time allotted that you needed to pay on your loan to be able to qualify that you didn't have a payment. Yeah. And so that just means more forgiveness at the end of the road, which is great. And payments should resume in February. The education department actually emphasized that this will be the last extension. So make sure you're setting yourself up financially to be ready for those payments to resume when the time comes. Be ready to make a student loan payment in February. And so
they're like, seriously this time?
Right, yeah. No, we mean it.
You're like, sure, government, okay.
I would not count on getting another one, that's for sure. The one thing you don't want to do with the money that you should be paying in student loans is to increase your lifestyle with those funds, because you're taking money that needs to be in your budget, you know, in a few months' time, and you're incorporating it into your spending, and then it becomes even harder, right, to untangle and to start paying on those student loans again. We would say set yourself up for success. Don't absorb that extra money into your spending, your outgoing funds.
Honestly, if you can continue making those payments, but just make them to yourself, right? Like, don't just let all the different categories of your budget just swell.
Right.
Instead, make sure you're earmarking that money. And like we said, make sure you're putting that towards something more meaningful, whether that's setting up your emergency fund, investing, saving that towards other financial goals. But the worst thing you want to do is to exit this period of time and then you're like, oh man, like that was a lot of money, right? Actually, when I total it all up, what was I actually able to do? And in reality, you just maybe spent it on drinks out with friends or just spending more at the store, whatever it is.
This is the perfect chance to get ahead financially, and you take advantage of it is what we would say. Yeah. And we're actually going to talk with a CSLP, that's a certified student loan professional, and also a former Olympic gold medal winner, Lauren Williams, on Monday's show about how to approach your student loans given the recent news. She is a fountain of knowledge, so we're looking forward to sharing that conversation with you.
That's right. And let's talk about inflation here for a minute. If you are a regular HTM Friday Flight listener, or maybe just as long as you're not living in a cave or something, you know that there have been some real inflation concerns recently. The New York Times, they had an article this week detailing just how bad things have gotten recently for savers. And largely that's because of rising inflation. Basically, even though your savings account might be paying you close to 0.5%, assuming you're with one of the better online banks. If you're with one of the huge banks, they're probably paying you like 0.05%.
Or at best.
At best. The real rate of return on your savings is actually negative these days, despite the fact that you might be earning 0.5%. Because first of all, 0.5%, that's pretty piddly in any environment, but it's actually going to look much worse as inflation gets worse. But the problem is, like, there is just not much that savers can do. Investing savings that you want to have on hand for a near-term purchase, or putting your emergency fund money in the stock market, that could leave you in a pickle if the market experiences turbulence, and you might have actually less money than you started with, even less money than just the impact of inflation on your dollars.
Yeah, it's dispiriting, I think, to read that headline as someone who enjoys saving. It's like, dang it, my savings is earning... Actually, it's negative returns right now.
Essentially, you feel disincentivized to do something that you know you should be doing.
Exactly. And especially with how well the market's been doing, I think people are like, well, I'm just going to take a chance. But there's not much wisdom there in that decision if you need that money in the short term. You basically have to roll with the punches. And a friend of the show, Ben Carlson, wrote this week that the current situation might be the worst ever for someone saving their money in a bank or a money market account. And we hate seeing that, because saving money is a good thing. It just feels awful to be saving in this current environment.
Yeah.
But if you are an oversaver in particular, and yes, that is a problem. There are some people that save too much money. You want to make sure that you are investing some of your money for the future. Obviously, like Matt said, don't invest money you're going to need in the here and now or in the next year or two. But also, don't assume that investing is risky and that keeping your money in savings in a savings account isn't. There is a very known and quantifiable risk right now to having too much money in savings. It's getting eaten alive.
Yeah. Currently, that risk is quantifiable because it is at 5.4%. Actually, that's
right.
The Labor Department put out the Consumer Price Index this past week. That is the level of inflation that we've seen, of course, over the past 12 months. But I will say, I think we should maybe be encouraged by the it did downtick, because in June it was 0.9, and so July numbers, it showed 0.5. So almost half of the increase that we saw in June. And so hopefully that might mean that we're actually kind of, reaching the top of the hill. Hopefully we'll see things continue to settle down in the coming months.
Yeah, I hope so. But yeah, I think, you know, Matt, we talked a while back in episode 69 about investing and how investing involves risk. In not investing is signing yourself up for this other kind of risk, right? This guaranteed risk of baked in losses. And so, yeah, inflation is going to steadily erode the spending powers of the dollars that you're saving. Savings has a place in personal finance for sure, but not investing and being too scared to put some of your money in the market is a recipe for like certain doom for those dollars over time.
That's right, man. Speaking of guaranteed losses, it turns out that the lack of competition is ensuring that more money is being parted from our wallets. There was this interesting article over in Bloomberg recently about how much money reduced levels of competition cost the average American family. The White House's National Economic Council estimates our collective losses at roughly $5,000 a year.
I want my money back.
But where does it come from?
I think that's how it works.
It comes from all the different companies who we pay because they are able to jack prices up, raise prices when there is a lack of competition. Much of that loss is due to companies merging, which creates fewer competitors in an industry. And they also point a finger at increased regulations as well. Apparently, 30% of jobs require a license now, whereas only 5% required one back in the 50s. Non-compete agreements, that's another factor that are keeping prices high. And, you know, we believe that capitalism, it's not foolproof. It's not without its own issues. But, you know, this warning about the high price that we pay, that we all pay when competition is diminished, this is an important one to heed.
Yeah, that's a big headline number. Like, to think about the average family has $5,000 less every single year to spend or to save or to do whatever they want with because there's not enough competition in certain sectors of our economy. That was eye-opening to read.
Yeah,
that
I mean, that's almost a Roth IRA.
Right.
I mean, just think about that over the years, how much that could grow to if you invested that instead.
Exactly. So it made me think, Matt, like I started thinking about the industries where competition is the stiffest, right? Like grocery stores, for example. You know, price competition is alive and well. It benefits consumers in society as a whole. That you have a lot of options of where you want to go in order to shop and get your groceries, right? You know, each chain is attempting to appeal to a different kind of customer with different budgets and different tastes. The airline industry is another perfect example. The Wall Street Journal actually reported this week that airfare prices have barely budged over the last 25 years. So the price you would have paid for a ticket to Europe 25 years ago, like a quarter of a century ago, is basically the same as what you'd pay now, in large part thanks to competition and innovation, right? And so, yeah.
It should cost a lot more given inflation,
right?
And the rising prices of everything else, but they haven't.
Exactly. And this was actually evidenced too by JetBlue. They announced this week that they're going to start partaking in round trip service from New York to London, which is going to lower prices in a big way. They're going to be this new low cost competitor to some of the major airlines who are flying that route consistently. And it's going to lower prices for every single person that wants to go from New York to London.
All those fancy folks.
Even some of those just general, you know, European trips in general too.
Yeah.
But yeah, then take an industry where competition is essentially non-existent, like getting home internet service. Like all of our listeners can identify with how painful it is to get home internet service set up at their house and how expensive it is. Prices are high. They're often not even transparent. You don't even know what your first month's bill is going to be, what taxes and fees are going to be included in there. So at the same time, customer service is abysmal from those companies. There's just no incentive for companies like Comcast and AT&T to do better. So, one of the fundamental truths of capitalism is that competition drives businesses to make things better, faster, and cheaper. Let's hope that the NEC, the National Economic Council, is looking for ways to bring competition back because too little of it seems to be costing all of us quite a bit of money every year.
That's right, man. All right. We are only halfway through our Friday flight. We've got several other stories that we're going to get to after the break, including how there seems to be bidding wars taking place on rental units. We'll get to that story plus several others right after this break.
All right, we're back. We got some more stories to get to, but of course, we always have to get around to our ludicrous
headline of the week.
All right, I'm concerned. Are you okay?
That was my Hagrid voice from Harry Potter.
I thought I was going to have to rush you to the hospital.
Do you like that one?
That was good.
We've talked about how we're reading Harry Potter to the kids. We're getting pretty close to the end of book three, which so far, dude, Book 3 is like easily one of the greatest. It's so good.
I gotta say, I know that Pixar is not reaching out to us to do any voiceovers for any of their characters. That's not gonna happen. But let's get to this week's ludicrous headline, and it is from the New York Times.
Of the week! you're a wizard, Harry!
That was better. That was better.
That's because you can hear him saying that.
Exactly. But yeah, this week's headline is titled, Even Your Allergist is Now Investing in Startups.
This is a good one.
Yeah, this was sent our way by listener Libby, and yeah, if you see a ludicrous financial headline, please send it our way. We would love to check it out and maybe feature it on an upcoming episode. But yeah, this one was basically touting the fact that everyone can become an angel investor these days. But we would say that's actually a bad thing. I mean, should you be investing in companies with massive quote unquote potential? We would say no, right? Big time angel investors like Mark Andreessen, Matt, he's been one of the most successful angel investors of all time. He knows this very well. I've heard him say it, that to be a successful angel investor, you need the best opportunities and you also need to get extremely lucky. Basically, you're investing in 300 companies, hoping that three of them are lucky enough to just outperform the competition to an incredible degree. And that infinitesimally small success ratio makes up for the other investments that fall flat on their face. Mm-hmm. But yeah, risky forms of investing seem to be the norm these days in our society. But for our listeners, you should opt out of the angel investing arena. This is not something you should pursue. The fees are also really high. So you're going to get eaten alive from that standpoint. And then you're also just like hoping on a wish and a prayer. And I guarantee you, if it's available to you, it is probably not one of the best angel investing possibilities out there.
Assuming you're just one of these casual angel investors.
Right.
You know, I think shows like Shark Tank have put angel investor within the vernacular, right? Like it's part of folks' vocabulary now. And they think, oh, well, and like when they're watching it on TV, they think, I knew that product was going to be a hit.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, they're armchair quarterbacking.
If only I had Mark Cuban's money, yeah. I would be doing the same thing.
But there's a huge difference between the billions of dollars that Mark Cuban has and like the thousands of dollars that you have. And just from a diversification standpoint, we don't want you to be an angel investor. The New York Times, they also had this great in-depth article about crypto and how easy it is now to make your own crappy crypto coin. You can launch a token for as little as $8 these days.
I think the writer launched one called Idiot Coin. Just try to see who would bite.
Yeah, I mean, just investing in most of these different crypto idiot coins or attempting to become an angel investor with some of your spare cash is likely going to lead to you seeing that money disappear. And so if you do really want to go this route, just make sure that you aren't investing money that you can't afford to lose. First, make sure that you're prioritizing socking away just a solid chunk into tax-advantaged retirement accounts before you even consider these other riskier forms of investing. And then also, just remember that you can always support the startup company in other ways, like just buying their product, buying their service, support them that way. And honestly, the amount of money that you would put towards that product or that service is going to be more likely to be in the like a healthy relationship to the amount of money that you have set aside, as you would see somebody like Mark Cuban, where he's setting aside thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, because that much to him might be like you going out and, you know, buying some fancy underwear that somebody's selling through their new startup company.
I've never bought fancy underwear, but maybe someday.
Maybe with like a special antimicrobial keeps the funk out. I don't know.
Yeah, I think this sort of angel investing trend, it just makes me think, just because you like Big Macs doesn't mean you should invest your money in McDonald's. And just because I like shopping at Costco doesn't mean I need to go out and put a lot of money where my mouth is when it comes to buying Costco stock. You can enjoy something or enjoy a product without investing in that company. And granted, I own a little bit of Costco because I own index funds. But yeah, it's one of those things where I think people want to support a company they believe in or they think it has a good trajectory. But there are so many things you need to know about a company before you invest in it. That's why I avoid single stock investing or investing in, you know, one particular company over this one altogether. If you've dedicated your whole life to it, somebody like Mark Cuban, it's a different story, right? But for most of our listeners who have day jobs and stuff like that, let's hit the easy button, go the diversified route, and just stay away from this investing space altogether.
Yes. And speaking of investing, while Americans collectively, they have over $80 billion in their HSA accounts, so their health savings accounts, they aren't taking full advantage of that benefit. And unfortunately, I think it's because it's called a health savings account.
Yep.
They make you think, like mentally, what do you picture when you think of a health savings account? You think, oh, I'm going to put this money into that account and I'm going to save it. It's just going to sit there. But that is not what we want you to do.
This is a case of bad branding.
Dude, totally. It should be a, what, HI account.
Right.
Health investing account. Because only 7% of folks are actually investing the money that they put into an HSA that they have available to them. And this is according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute. And that's understandable because no one, you know, talks about what a great investing vehicle HSAs can be. I mean, we talk about it here, but it's not often something you hear about. We actually did a deep dive back in episode 105. So go back and check that one out if you're putting money into an HSA and you're not investing those funds. We want you to use your HSA to its full potential. It really is the best stealth retirement account out there. And I've also heard some folks to say, well, make sure that you set aside enough in cash to be able to at least cover your health deductible. But even still, like, you should have enough money in your emergency fund to cover any unforeseen health costs.
Yeah.
In fact is, too, you can count on the fact that you're probably going to go to the doctor at least once or twice during the year. So just set up another account within your savings buckets or however you have your budget set up, but have an out-of-pocket medical costs category that you can count on when it comes to things like deductibles or out-of-pocket costs.
Yeah, and that's really because you want to maximize the HSA. You want to maximize that account because it has so many benefits that, like you said, Matt, kind of go unnoticed or they don't get talked about. And so, yeah, if you do have an HSA and you haven't started investing inside of that, go listen to episode 105 because it's going to be really eye-opening, I think, for how much power that HSA holds. It's almost like having a Lamborghini and then putting a governor on it to max it out the speed at like 20 miles an hour. The HSAs are just so much more powerful than the way that they're being used by most people these days.
Totally.
All right, well, let's keep moving, Matt. There was an interesting article on Jalopnik's website this week about how awful car loans can be. And sadly, actually, this article was in slideshow format, which is... Is that the worst online format?
It is completely the worst.
It's like autoplay videos and slideshow format.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Get those out of my face, please. Yeah. Can we be done with those?
Or just general pop-ups. Honestly, now, like, the cookie pop-ups kind of drive me crazy now. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Just, like, take my info. Like, I know that I'm giving up a certain amount of privacy by going to the site.
But don't make me click OK.
Don't interrupt me.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So, Jalopnik detailed, actually, the goriest details of the worst car loans that their readers have experienced or that they've seen friends take on. And it was kind of awe-inducing to see how bad car loans can get. And you might be asking, well, what was the worst element that many of these car loans had in common? Trading in another car that someone was upside down on in order to purchase another new vehicle. That was kind of the common denominator, Matt, for a lot of these worst car loans. You know, some folks actually rolled multiple vehicles, like not just one, like two or three with negative equity into a new loan on another vehicle, which of course landed them not just like a greatly inflated loan amount, but also a much, much higher interest rate because there's a lot more risk to the lender. We're really not fans of car loans at all. We'd prefer to see our listeners never, ever have one, but definitely these kinds of loans where you still have a loan on the car that you currently own and you're trying to get another one and you're rolling it into another loan, that's like the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that probably goes to explain why car loan debt has doubled over the past decade, which is an insane stat. But one other big pitfall was folks buying their vehicle from a buy here, pay here lot. Those are the absolute worst places on earth to purchase a vehicle. Joe, like you mentioned, ideally, listeners aren't going to finance their cars at all. And you can do that when you have a more affordable vehicle. It's not too difficult to find something that's reliable in the $5,000 to $10,000 range if you're able to search diligently. But, you know, if you are going to take out a loan in order to buy a vehicle, make sure that you do shop around for that loan with your local credit union. Kind of bring it full circle again. Like we said, oftentimes they offer the best rates, and it also might be worth checking online lenders as well because those rates are getting more competitive. The other thing too, don't extend the loan terms in order to buy a more expensive car. If you can't afford the monthly payments on a 36 to 42 month loan, then you can't afford that vehicle. Look at something a little more affordable.
Yeah, the problem is when people take out an 8-year loan and then 4 or 5 years into it, they're like, I want something new, or
a new ride.
This car's giving me issues now. It's time to trade it in and get something else, but you still owe money on it. That puts you like behind the eight ball in a big way when it comes to your finances and the monthly payment you're going to have on that loan as well. By the way, it is important to note that cars are going back to becoming depreciating assets. For a hot minute, Matt, basically for the last year, the prices of used cars have been going up and up. And it appears that was a blip that is now kind of subsiding. The prices of used cars aren't going to go back to normal levels overnight, but it is a good sign that cars are back to being a depreciating asset. That was kind of one of those mind-blowing things for, I don't know, for us, I think, and for everybody out there. It's like, how in the world are used car prices skyrocketing to this level? Obviously, the supply chain issues, the chip issues that are put into new cars that are being built. There were so many different things impacting this market and driving prices higher, but it's good to see that correction kind of starting to happen.
Yeah, so if you were maybe hanging on to a used car thinking that like, hey, if I hang on to it for like one more month, maybe I'll see its value increase, chances are that is not going to be the case. I feel like we're, again, like at the top of a roller coaster and we're only going to see the prices continue to drop from here.
Yeah, we're always in favor of you getting rid of one of those extra cars that's in your life. So yeah, Matt's right. Sell now if you've got an extra one you're hanging on to. Matt, let's talk about bidding wars in the rental market. Is that a thing? It turns out it is.
It's actually happening.
We've seen obviously a lot of headlines about bidding wars when it comes to buying a house, but it's also happening now in the especially single family home rental market. An article in CNBC this week reflected exactly what I actually recently saw when I listed one of my rental properties for homes in some of the hotter areas of the country. Some landlords are receiving an abnormally high number of applications. Matt, I had nearly 40 people reach out in less than 48 hours when I listed my little tiny Atlanta in-town house recently. And it turns out that high demand is increasing the average price of rent too at a pace of almost 7% annually versus rent price increases last year. And it's even leading to bidding wars for some of these properties, right? So if you're a renter, it's important to know that prices are going up, that it's a competitive environment in certain locations, and that could affect your ability to find affordable housing.
Yeah, and hopefully you're several months away from having to find a new place because that should give you enough time to turn your credit score around if maybe it's in the dumps. You want to make sure that your credit score is in a good spot, typically at least 740, if not a bit higher, because this is something that landlords are going to be looking at pretty closely. They're going to want to see how responsible you are with your payments pretty closely if there's such a large pool of applicants. And another sort of tactic, if you have enough cash on hand, even consider offering to put down a larger security deposit. Just essentially anything you can do to stand out and make yourself a more attractive tenant can help. Good communication, that's always a plus, but you might even need to get a little more creative, like offering to take care of the lawn. If the landlord says, hey, you know, outside lawn maintenance, that's included, it's just like, well, hey, what if I take care of that for you? You don't have to worry about it. Look for ways to kind of sweeten the deal for the landlord to want to pick you over the other 39 people who are applying for that same house.
Yeah, and depending on where you live, you're going to know. You're going to see, you can look on Zillow and see like how many hits some of these properties are getting, and it's like
they've got the little popularity chart built into it.
So it's like, okay, cool. If this is a popular spot, or if it's priced well, you got to be ready to move. And it's funny, Matt. Like here, I always tell people this. I'm not trying to pressure them to sign on the spot or anything like that. But I'm like, they're like, well, I'll get back to you in a couple of days. And I'm like, okay,
ain't gonna be there in a couple
of
days.
I'm just
buddy.
Letting you
Sorry.
Know. Like somebody usually asks to apply, and that process moves quickly, and they're usually ready to sign by that day or the next day. So it's just one of those things too, where you have to know what you want, and you have to be willing to kind of jump on it to pounce when the right rental house comes along that you want to stay in. So all right, that's gonna do it for this episode. For folks who want the show notes for this episode, links to some of the articles that we mentioned on this Friday flight, you can go to our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. We hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. We will see you back here on Monday with that interview with Lauren Williams. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.